welcome on an official podcast, second edition. Today I have with myself Peter and Charlie. We are going to talk about very interesting stuff. I would say I have my personal touches with it because in my experience, Charlie was the one who opened me new experiences in Commerce Cloud. I was a JetBrains guy back in the time when I worked with PHP, and I was worked with PHP Storm. And then when I switched to Commerce Cloud, I was forced to work with Eclipse, which I honestly hated. So, yeah, Charlie, like, can you tell us about yourself? Who are you? I mean, what are you doing? Just, you know, some short introduction for the folks who doesn't know you.
Yeah, sure. My name is Charlie Schwenier. I've been doing software development for probably getting close to 15 years now. I started out working for a company named Dealer.com up in Burlington, Vermont, and as a software as a service company. So I spent about 3.5 years there before I moved over to I got a job offer at Burton Snowboards, and I really didn't know a lot about what they were doing at the time. You know, as an e-commerce site that I was going to be working on, I was like, this is cool. I'm going to be, you know, working for Burton Snowboards. It's like a widely recognized brand. I'm from Vermont, and like, you know, as a brand I've been familiar with growing up. So it was like, all right, I'm just going to jump into this and do it. And then, you know, when I got there, you know, we talked about we're going to be working with a platform called Demandware. So, you know, that's how I really got into the ecosystem. So, you know, that probably, yeah, about probably like getting close to 10 years ago now that I started on working with a platform. So, yeah, so that's kind of how I got into working with Commerce Cloud. Just started out, it was kind of just a little bit random, but yeah, I've been doing it ever since, and yeah, it's a great platform.
So you actually met the history of platform evolution starting from the pipelines, then, I mean, Sygenesis with the pipeline, then Sygenesis with the controllers, then storefront reference architecture, SFRA, evolution from when everyone were forced to work with Eclipse, and then to now when we have different options. So how was your experience, I mean, with the development experience so far?
Yeah, so that was the first thing when I started working with Demandware. We did have some pipelines that was, I don't ever want to go back to pipelines. That was a terrible time in the ecosystem. And I used to use IntelliJ at my previous company, Dealer.com, that I just mentioned. And I just couldn't stand using Eclipse. I mean, you know, big part of it was you couldn't even get themes to work right, especially if you wanted the dark themes. So I mean, it sounds petty, but it was, you know, really a driving force. So I immediately just started, you know, looking for ways to not use Eclipse. So the first iteration of that was a tool I built called DW Upload. And that was a tool I built in Python, and I it's still on the Python package index, and it was a file system watcher, and it'd watch the file system and it would upload using WebDAV. I was able to figure that out because we used Ant scripts for the build. So I don't know if you're familiar with Ant scripts, but it's a XML based build system that's from Java, and it is not the most fun thing to work with. So, but it did have, you know, I read the code and I figured out, oh, they're making requests over WebDAV to deploy the code and cartridges. And I was kind of understanding how, you know, the client interacted with the server. So that's kind of how I started, you know, picking this thing apart. And I built that tool, and then I started getting my team using it, and you know, we were using other tools besides, you know, because it was a little bit hard to get some developers to come over to the platform. All of a sudden, they're like, oh, you got to use Eclipse, and you're kind of stuck in this platform, and you can't use the tools you like to use, and things like that. This is a little bit of a tough sell. So, So that was the first attempt, was, you know, building that tool. And then I was like, oh, well, this is pretty cool. And I started looking into plugins for IntelliJ and how to build those. So that's kind of like the next step that I took. And that was really difficult to do because it's not a well documented, or wasn't at the time. Building plugins was not well documented for IntelliJ. It's in Java, which is not, you know, at the time it wasn't a language I was as deeply familiar with. You know, so it was tough just going from, you know, you writing JavaScript all day. I was primarily doing web stuff. Java's just it's a different beast, you know? So it was tough, and it's all like, you know, auto completion and stuff. It's all based on, I believe like ASTs with like the way it chunks apart the code, to provide the advanced, IntelliSense and things it does. It really, it's not, easy thing to get into. So that I just kind of started digging around forums and reading code and just trying to figure it out. And I built, I think I had one plugin called Demandware Studio. And then I had that for a while. I just used it myself for a while and then introduced my team to it. And it was working good. And it mostly just uploaded at the time. I think that was basically all it did was just upload and provided a few things. But then I was like, oh, this is cool. I could add some like live templates so we could have like, you know, autocomplete. And I was like, oh, how can I autocomplete some ISML and do some of that? So I just started adding features over time. And then it did what I needed to. So I kind of got away from it for a little while. I keep it updated so people could use it. But I kind of got a little bit away from it because it did what I needed. And, you know, I didn't need to do a lot more than that. But then I sort of was like, I want to make this thing better. So I kind of, when Salesforce bought Demandware, I started seeing the ecosystem grow. And I was like, I could provide a tool that could help a lot of people. I'll just rebrand this thing and, you know, to go with a new branding, because no one's going to be looking for Demandware anything anymore. So I just called it SFCC Studio, you know, really creative there, but that's what I called it.
That's true.
So, yeah.
Just small. Oh, sorry, Peter. I just wanted to make a small disclaimer for the audience. Like, guys, if you still work with the pipelines, we feel you. Don't worry, the day will come. The bright day will come. We're almost there. Soon you will just work with nice and new modern stuff. Okay, Peter, here you go.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you had the similar journey that I went down with starting with dark theme.
it all comes back to the dark.
It all comes down to the dark theme for Eclipse. Yeah. I actually internally wrote a bunch of documentation for that for my team, and then went down that same road of like, how can I not use Eclipse other than pipeline debugging? So I'm one of the people who I tried to make my own tool. So I'm not really familiar with yours. And for other people who might be stuck with Eclipse like myself, sometimes when I'm doing debugging, what would you say like are the main like features for the tool that you built, like just as a selling thing for maybe other people out there?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, if you like IDEs and like JetBrains products, it enables you to use that particular editor with doing development. So that's like that was a huge thing. While building it, as I said, it has like ISML auto completion. It has script injection, so it can highlight script in ISML. I added a debugger recently, so it can provide debugging like Eclipse or Prophet debugger. So that was something I recently added. What else can it do? I recently added require go-to dependency. So you can like click through the path and get to the file. I had added template. Like if you're in an ISML template, you can click a little icon and jump to the include. So like if you're looking at a file and you want to know where that include's going to, you can click a button, it'll take you to that file. Try and think of what other features that I have.
It sounds like a lot. You're just building things out as you discover you need them, which is kind of a natural path for people who make tools to just make it do what you need to do. And then you get feedback from other people and then you just keep building new things on top of it.
Yeah, that's pretty much the evolution of it. Has been like, okay, what do I need? What does my team need? I've gotten a few feature requests, but I have some download stats, so I know I have regular users, and really the only time I hear from them is if something doesn't work. So I don't really I'm sure you know how that is, but like I don't hear from people too often. Like, you know, I know people are using the tool outside of myself and my former team. I think my new team that I'm working with, I recently started a new job at the Orvis company. They all use VS Code. So I don't have the IntelliJ contingent anymore, but I do look at Prophet to see what features they offer, and I will, you know, get inspiration there and try to maybe add some features, that Prophet might have. Like it heavily inspired the debugger, knowing how that worked. I read a lot of code, so that's kind of like
I have a nerdy question for you. I know one of the things that I got asked for an implementation I did is that Eclipse uses port 60606 for loading files, and it's possible that you can like open files from that port, like when you're doing debugging. Does yours support that stuff too? Because I think that was one of the, when you leave Eclipse, you lose that ability to like open up a file remotely.
Yeah, it does. I don't think it won't open up a file remotely. I didn't even know about that. That's pretty cool.
So if you look at you've got the demandware or the DW marker markup scripts inside of it, you can actually, it's got a file path in it, and then you can actually, you can set it up so that it uses localhost port 60606, and then it'll have the path to your template. And then Eclipse will allow you to have that file. So when you're going through some debugging stuff, like you can actually open up a template file, and it'll trigger the load in Eclipse. Prophet Debugger supports it too for VS Code, but it's one of those things that when you leave the native environments, like you lose that. Not everyone nerds out like that and gets into that level of like support on that stuff. So if it wasn't something there, that would be cool. We can talk about that offline.
But yeah,
that's definitely a cool feature of having that port running in the background, is you can actually run things natively with demandware.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, the debugger in IntelliJ, like when you hit a breakpoint, it'll stop and open you up to where that breakpoint was. So it'll jump to that file, right, when you're in there. And then I added to the console, you know, you can click on the breakpoint and jump to where the breakpoint is in the console when it's set. I think it shows the threads, so you can go around and look at the stack and jump to the different files while that's running.
I don't even think VS Code shows stack call stacks, does it, for debugging?
I don't know. I don't use it that much, so I wouldn't know. But
yeah, I was just thinking about that. I'm like, you just have to step through everything. You don't get a call stack.
Yeah, that was the interesting part, like of building the debugger, was understanding how the SD API 2.0 works. And it was really cool because you go through and you have to get all the frames, and you have to get, you know, it has everything a debugger has, but it's all through a REST API. And then I had to essentially take that REST API and hook it into the IntelliJ classes, because they have something called the XDebugger, which you can implement any type of debugger as long as you follow that pattern. So there's a series of classes you implement, and then they have like the frames and the call stack and all that stuff, and you kind of map everything together. So it definitely took me a little while to figure that out. But
I think Oleg and I are pretty familiar with XDebug, our old PHP days.
Oh, well,
true. Yeah. Charlie, you actually mentioned that in the beginning you were writing the first version in Java. Right now, it's still in Java. You're using Kotlin or like any other language for the plugin?
Yeah, so it still uses a little bit of Java. I think I've switched it over to about 80 or 90% Kotlin. I think it says on GitHub how much percentage of which language. So I think I'm getting up there. There's a few things. There's a UI framework for building forms in IntelliJ. So like the settings panel that uses that UI framework. And in Kotlin, they have a new thing called Compose, and it's for Android. It's like Jetpack Compose, and it's like a declarative way to write UI code, kind of like React, but it uses just Kotlin. There's no like JSX. It's actual function calls and stuff. So there's something like that in IntelliJ. There's a UI for that. There's an API for that. I haven't used it yet, though, so I'm not sure, but I'm kind of really interested in it because Kotlin is a really exciting language. I don't know if you've looked into it at all, but it's basically the preferred language on Android. At least that's what they've been pushing. So there's a lot of developers out there that use it. I think I saw their recent stats is like over a million million programmers use Kotlin now. So it runs on top of the JVM, and they're building tools that Jetpack Compose I was just talking about. They also recently released Compose for desktop. So now you can build desktop apps with it. And then they have for web. So they have one that will compile it to web, and they have one for iOS. So they're basically building this like multi-platform. So you can write Kotlin and then have a layer that you can use and share between all those different layers, and then write the native UI code. So Android, the native would be Kotlin, but iOS would still be in Swift, but you could call into the libraries for like your networking calls and business logic, and that will compile down to, Objective-C, I believe. The native stuff. So you still have like a building a native experience. So it's a little bit different approach, but I think it's pretty exciting. That's been one of the motivations lately to work on the plugin is just to learn Kotlin. Like it's a really cool language, and it makes development a lot easier than Java.
Yeah, it sounds
Question. Sorry, go ahead, Peter.
I was going to say it sounds a little bit like Electron and Cordova and those kinds of things, like as far as a framework that hooks into like system level stuff. I hadn't heard of Kotlin before, so I'll have to look into that. That's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool.
That's actually one of interesting topics. I was following few, let's say, very good guys in architecture and in general in IT. And they have an idea that if you want to become a better architect or you want to become a better tech lead or engineer, you have to learn other languages, programming languages, and each programming language will make you a better problem solver, better thinker. Charlie, right now you have experience with JavaScript, with Java and Kotlin. So how true is that statement? Because let's say, I'm not sure about you, Peter, but I coded professionally only with PHP and JavaScript, right? I mean, professionally, I'm not talking about my trials in Python, Java and C Sharp. This is just like playing, but in general, I just did like PHP and JavaScript. So let's say I have two stars, and I feel that PHP also impacted the way how I think about this stuff, the same way how JavaScript then changed my mind. And I feel that I became a better engineer with those two languages, but you now have like three or maybe even more. So how is that true? Or maybe not true that languages impacting the way you think, you write the code, and solve the problems.
I think it's super important to learn more languages. I think it definitely opens up your thinking, especially if you, like you mentioned PHP and JavaScript, if you haven't really coded things in a typed language before, I think it just opens your world up to just thinking through problems a little differently. And I think that's where the real value is. I mean, at this point, I can usually sit down and read code I've never seen before and somewhat understand it, depending on how close it is to the languages I already know. I might be able to understand it fairly well and just, you know, it's not like executing, but I get the gist of it pretty quickly generally. So it's, I wouldn't say I know exactly what it does, but it definitely helps. And I advocate to, you know, if you can try to learn a different language. I can't remember if it was Pragmatic Programmer or which book it was, but they suggest learning a new language every year. And I tried that early in my career, but it's a lot of work. And some years I would just, you know, with JavaScript, I did a lot of JavaScript professionally with front end JavaScript. And I just at one point just doubled down on it for my year of learning a language. I was like, I want to really learn JavaScript. Like, I want to know what the prototypes do. I want to know what closures are. I want to know like really deeply how JavaScript works. So, you know, as I'm working with it, I can understand the problems better. So I, you know, I think just even doing that, sometimes you might learn new things about a language you're really familiar with if you kind of really dig in. So
planning to take certification from Salesforce, JavaScript Developer 1? Sorry, joke aside. I mean, anyway, I sometimes making stupid jokes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Alok, I was going to say, I 100% agree with you on the more you learn, I think you get more concepts like of actual just like fundamentals of how things are put together. Like, you know, when you start with one programming language, you start to learn things like how a function works, the concepts of conditional statements and things like that. When you get into like different programming languages, they're essentially the concepts are the same, but how they execute them are different. And then eventually, after you've done a few of them, you get to a point where you're just kind of shortcutting it because you can learn more quickly because you know that the concepts are probably going to be similar, but how they execute them are slightly different. So it becomes like the way you think about even just development, it gets changed the more you learn about this stuff. So to me, it's a fascinating thing, just how the brain processes that stuff the more you get into it. So you don't even have to fully get into it seriously, just even like a couple of weeks playing around with some of them are actually usually pretty helpful to understand concepts and grow.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. I don't think you need to go super deep on every language, but just learn enough to kind of learn some new concepts that particular language has is really, really cool, powerful, I feel like.
JavaScript's looking like to be the most diverse of all of them, though, because you can write computer hardware now and like go crazy on pretty much anything with JavaScript. So it seems like if you're going to learn one, that might be a good one to start with.
Yeah.
Charlie, so can we say that to our audience, if you guys want to learn new language, we recommend to learn Kotlin, then go to your repository and contribute to the plugin with the new features. This will be the best. Practical.
<That's awesome. laughs> I think it would be a really great thing to do, honestly. I mean, I've had one contributor a long time ago, and I thank them for the features, but I would love more. And I would say Kotlin would be a cool language to learn, so I would be happy to accept new features. And I would say, like, the one cool thing about building this plugin, in addition to learning a new language, is just the amount of code that I have to read and try to understand the way the IDE works. I mean, it's just I always heard, like, you know, reading code was a great way to learn and like go to the source. And I rarely used to do that until I actually started using IntelliJ products because it makes it so easy. I used to do like a lot of Django development and Python, and I would just go to definition and jump into the actual framework code and read it. And I'd be like, oh, that's easy. You know, like instead of trying to search through the docs over and over, like actually being able to get to the source. I know we can't do that with Commerce Cloud, unfortunately, but like, it, you know, it's nice to be when you go in and just read the source to be able to understand like what it's doing. It really helps a lot. So when developing the plugin for the IDE, it's really cool kind of getting in there and understanding like how these different techniques work and understanding. So that's been a huge help too.
Sorry, I was just laughing because, I mean, maybe not everyone knows, but I'm currently working for Salesforce. And when you say like jump into the source code, I feel you. Sometimes, I mean, even me, I work as a technical architect. So usually I'm in a similar position as solution integrator. So like, right, who actually helping customers to achieve business goals. But sometimes, but even, I mean, I don't also have capability to just go and check the source code. If I want to understand something in the deep, I would have to go to engineering team and talk with them. And I mean, trying to understand how stuff is done. So I totally with you that it's sometimes easier to have full access and go there and understand yourself. But I guess it's just not a problem. It's kind of a concern of a constraint of those enterprises, big enterprises, when they have their own IP, right, that they want to protect and evolve. So we just need to live with that, I guess. And when you actually also said about the languages, different one, it started me to think about competition. So for those who doesn't work with IntelliJ and JetBrains, they don't know, but I know that there are actually two plugins over there, right? I mean, yours and another one, but let's not name it. I mean, there is another one, right? So what do you feel about the maybe you don't feel it's a competition, but let's say if it would be competition, what do you feel about competition? What do you feel about having two different solutions in the ecosystem? Is it helping you like to make your solution better, like motivates you, or it's another way? I mean, what's your thoughts about this one?
Well, it's a good question. I had the original plugin. I've had it for a long time. And like I said, it's mostly been my needs. And, I'm glad to be able to help the community. I believe pretty strongly in that. So my plugin's always been free. The other one I know about is a paid subscription plugin. And I think what motivates that developer is, you know, having something that's paid that they can make revenue from. And I think they support it well. I think they have a Slack and are responsive to issues and things like that. So, I mean, if that's important to you and you want to pay for that, and there's certainly other features because they have different motivations than I do. So, I say go for it. You know, use the other plugin. But if you like to use my plugin, I'm happy to share. I think it's great to be able to give back to the community. You know, I've had a lot of help from other people. I use other tools. I'm going to be looking at Peter's tools that Red Van has been putting out there. I think that's really awesome. I love that open source spirit. So that's kind of like where I am with the tools that I develop. I gave out the DW upload tool. I don't know if anyone downloaded it, but I put it out there. That was a long time ago. I've had these two plugins.
I've used your DW upload. That's actually one of the things I used to learn how all that stuff works for some of the things I built. So thank you. I didn't realize that was you. I probably didn't recognize your username, but yeah, that was absolutely helpful. Yeah.
Well, it did you use a Python one or JavaScript one?
It was whichever one was on. It's on GitHub, correct? I think.
Yeah, it's probably not. So it's old. Yeah, there's an older one, and it came out after the one I built. And it's a JavaScript version. I think someone that used to work for Salesforce wrote that. Yeah. And it's named the exact same thing.
Yeah. It's just the concept of it. I was going to suggest too, like, or not to us, because I know you and I both do like, open source things, but I think what would be surprising for most people is how flexible the authors of open source software are with actually improving it and adding features to it. So if it's something that it's not doing what you want it to do, it's actually usually adding a feature request or even like fleshing out an idea with an author is actually usually works out to your benefit. Like you can actually get things to do what you need them to do if they don't already do that just by starting a dialogue with the author. So I'm not sure if Charlie, that's this experience you have, but yeah.
This is actually, Peter, what we discussed again this week, that I talked that, hey, we have multi-cloud already solutions, like enablement one called B2C CRM thing, right? And out of the box, DevTools, the tool from Redvan, right? It doesn't show you that customer information. And we were talking, hey, how we can extend actually to the new multi-cloud use cases. Like we have a loyalty cloud, right? Maybe like other use cases. So, I mean, natively for the Salesforce, there will be almost out of the box data that I as developer want to see in terms of the existing session. So how I can extend it. And you, Peter, were pretty open, right? I mean, I was just asking where I have to dig in to understand it. And you showed me all the file that I need to go. Hey, yeah, go there. Yeah. Like read this.
And most of the features that we've had built out are actually from our clients and people who are using it. So it's just, but they just had a relationship with us and they felt like it was okay to say, hey, it doesn't do this. Can you make it do that? And then we would just, oh, of course, I had never even considered that. So yeah, that's for people who might be using Charlie stuff who aren't contributing, it's do it. You'll probably get what you want out of it if you start that conversation. So
yeah, I think, you know, before the plugin that I have was very hard to develop on. I mean, you had to go through it took me like 4 hours to set it up. Just the first time I read through the documentation, the old way, it was all manual setup. It was Java stuff. It was like checking out the open source version of IntelliJ. It was finding stuff on your file path and adding the toolkit and all this stuff. And it was a huge pain in the butt. And I'm surprised anyone actually did that, to contribute before. Like there was one person willing to go through that. Now it's all set up with a build system called Gradle, which is similar to like your NPM, or it's a dependency management. So now you open the project up in something like IntelliJ and it understands the Gradle build script and it just sets it all up and you're ready to go. I mean, maybe, you know, I haven't done it for a while, so maybe it's not that easy, but it's pretty easy. And, you know, it sets everything up. So you can just start working on something. You can actually, it's pretty cool. You run the IDE from the IDE. So you just hit, you know, run IDE, I think it's called, and it starts up another instance of IntelliJ with your plugin installed. And then you can also debug. So like, you can set the debugger, set breakpoints, run the debugger, and then click in the IDE, and then it will break as you do actions in the IDE. It's actually pretty cool.
That's awesome. VS Code does the exact same thing with their extension development. So I've made a couple of those. Yeah, it's amazing. It spins up a new instance of VS Code. It's got your extensions in there, and you can do everything like you're developing in the environment that you're using to write your code in. It's kind of mind blowing. It's fun.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, let me open one secret that actually years ago, I contacted you, Charlie. Not sure if you remember this, but I was starting to use the plugin, right? I was super happy to use it, but I wanted more features. And I was like, hey, Charlie, like, how it's going? Are you like developing the features? Charlie said, yeah, I'm busy with my stuff, but if you want to contribute, you can do it. So this is my moment to open you the story that I tried. I was looking into the docs, and as Charlie, you said, it was too difficult, and I gave up. I transparently saying that on that moment I gave up, and I was like, I was feeling I wanted to do that, but I was not able to cross the line. So maybe, you know, today if it's easier to do, right, as with the Gradle other tools, I guess this is one of the showstoppers for not only the plugin development, but even in Salesforce, right? Like when you get the new guys in the ecosystem right now, they also kind of struggle, get to know the platform, get knowledge, get information, how everything works, start their development. And they have this moment when they are very close to give up, right? So they maybe wants to start their journey. They trying to get into it, but then they don't find the support. They don't find enough resources and other stuff, and they just giving up. So Charles, what are your tips? I mean, in terms of both sides, plugin development, if anyone would like to contribute and start something, right, what would be your recommendation? How they can easier get to know, how they can, let's say, break this wall of constraint, right? And what would be the same for Commerce Cloud? If someone pretty new that just want to start their career with Commerce Cloud, what would be your tip how they can get closer to the platform, understand it better?
So the plugin, I think over the years, like since they have the marketplace now, so there's a plugin marketplace because, you know, you can sell plugins. So they've done a ton of work with the documentation. It is so much better. There's a Slack that you can go on and ask help. And there's dedicated people that are on staff that work there that will answer questions. And, you know, I'm on the SFCC Slack. If you are serious about developing for my plugin, I will help you. So, you know, you can hit me up too. But it's really easy to get going. You know, it helps if you use IntelliJ. I'm not going to lie, but you just check out my repo, throw it in IntelliJ, understands how to run Gradle. You will get the actions to run IDE and you could be building features right away. I'm probably oversimplifying it, but it's really easy to get going. It's not like what you went through before. And, you know, I would even, you know, Oleg, if you want, you could give it another shot. I know you're busy person, but you know, I would recommend trying again because it is not that difficult anymore. And then in terms of, you know, Commerce Cloud, I think it's really to help people. It is really removing those barriers to, you know, getting set up. So, it's difficult, you know, some people aren't used to having that sandbox environment, having, you know, understanding the web dev connection, how things are uploaded, you know, how the scripts are executed. I think that's the most challenging part that's not really well explained. A lot of people, I'm the type of person that likes to understand a system, you know, like the whole thing. I don't like it when someone's just like, here's a little piece, do that, come back. Like, here's a little piece, like, just explain it to me. Explain that there's a remote sandbox. It communicates with web dev. When you save something on your IDE, it just uploads HTTP and the engine knows how to execute that on the server when you visit a page. Okay, I understand it. Now it's not like so foreign to me and I can, you know, kind of start working. I don't know if that would help everyone, but I think just having people understand those things would definitely help out. Because that's like where my hurdle was. I wanted to understand like how the whole thing worked. Maybe not like the whole thing, but at least have a better idea of how it worked so I could get going. You know, just having those barriers of setting up an environment, getting going, like you said, people get close to giving up because when it's not uploading, when it's not working, when you can't see your changes, when you know, things aren't happening, it can get very frustrating, you know, like, oh, is the code version set, is XYZ. There's a whole set of things that you can go through, debugging steps, and just having those all kind of like, I have them in my mind, but having them like written down somewhere in your documentation. So like, here's some troubleshooting steps, like, here's what might be going wrong. I think that's the biggest thing, honestly, with Commerce Cloud. I think once you get past that, it's you're writing JavaScript and you need to understand the APIs. So showing people how to go through the documentation, you know, it's Java API documentation. If you're not familiar with how to browse and read Java API documentation and understand how the classes, you know, like their object, everything's an object, there's classes, you know, they inherit from each other. Sometimes you need to find methods that might exist on an object that it's been inherited from. You know, if you kind of understand how to jump around the docs and know things are objects, I think that helps a lot. So those are kind of the big things for me.
This is amazing feedback. Most of the audience does know it, but we in an official community, we actually brainstorming something like an official academy that what we were thinking is just to make potential candidates, new like juniors who are new to the platform, as you said, right, remove this barrier and give them the information they need. So I guess I will watch this recording maybe once, maybe more time on slow and pause all the time just to write down what you just said, because I think this is most valuable thing. I mean, real experience and those ideas in terms, as you said, right, navigate through the classes, see those inheritance, understanding how it's deployable. This is a very good one. Cool. I actually like our discussion today, you know. Okay, you also mentioned community, right? So what's community play role in your life? I mean, maybe official, not official one. How do you use it? Like, is there any value behind it? I mean, for you, for yourself and your team?
I find that the Slack, the unofficial Slack, through the years has been the best place to find information for myself, because, you know, I used to use Exchange, and what I found there was as a closed community. So there wasn't like, it was hard to search was a big deal, but there's also a lot of very specific use cases. So typically what would happen is you'd be at your company, you have a very, very specific use case, and you'd ask that very, very specific question, and you'd get an answer, and that would live there, and people would point to this one article. But it never really kind of fit a more broader general sense of what to do. So it's always kind of like fumbling through trying to figure out, okay, how can I take this thing that kind of does what I want it to, but not really, because they were worried about some, you know, tax thing in a country I've never heard of, and trying to do something with, you know, some weird use case that, like, but you needed like one-tenth of the answer, and then you're trying to take that and build a different solution. So I find just having direct conversations on the Slack much better. And I think the material, you know, the platform's changed so much over the years that, you know, there's just a lot of old content, and it changes rapidly. So I think in Slack, it's great, because that content is always changing. So I think you need to have something that's more up to date, and I'm so happy and thank you for your work to get the community with a paid version, so we can have the history, because there's so many gems in there. So I think that's been great. I really enjoy the Slack a lot. I would like to see a better, more perm. I guess now is a little bit more permanent, but like I'm not a huge fan of the community after they closed Exchange and moved it to, not even sure what it is exactly, but it's like a forum, but it's not, there's not a lot of topics. It's hard, you know, it's, I just feel like it's not, set up for the breadth of information that we need to have in the community. So I would like to see something a little bit better in that area, but as far as the Slack goes, I love it. It's great.
Okay, this is good feedback. I mean, I bet that few folks from Salesforce will listen to this podcast. If not, I'll just give them timestamp of this moment and just pinging them, because maybe community doesn't know this, but really product managers from Salesforce, they listening, they trying to hear community, they see what's going on. Of course, not all the time we are able to very proactively, you know, like very quickly react to all the changes and apply them, because of course there is on roadmaps, other stuff, but I can assure you that, I mean, Salesforce listen, not, I mean, just Salesforce organization, but also people, they listen, they trying to make things better. And even in an official community, there are a lot of folks who actually works in Salesforce, and they are there, they helping others. If you had some, let's say, very difficult requirements for headless or mobile app task, you would see Holger jumping in and trying to help, or Danny Gale, like right there, like they are cool guys who knows the stuff over there, or maybe Ilya or other Salesforce guys would just jump in trying to help. So, I mean, this is good feedback. Thank you for this. Oh, I don't know. Let's say maybe we can wrap up. And if you wish, what you would like to say to have a listen or watch us on the podcast, like what's, I don't know. This could be our classic ending of the podcast. So whoever we invite, like just, you know, this is your time. This is your prime time. So go ahead, tell whatever you want.
Oh man, all the pressure now. I don't know. I think it's just great that, you know, I don't even know what to say with that kind of intro, but I'm just happy that there's people out there that, you know, find my plugin helpful, you know, that found those things, you know, the development tools and everything everyone builds helpful. And I hope to see more community contributions and more tools built up. I'm secretly hoping for more, I know you mentioned it in the DevOps area. I would love to see a more standardized solutions around that. So if anyone's thinks of building anything, wants to share, that would be really cool. I think, you know, that would help remove some of the barriers people have to, I think, getting started and you know, getting started with a platform and deploying and things like that. So would love to see more work in that area. I think it's incredibly important for how teams work and work together. So I don't know if that was a great ending or not, but
great ending. Peter, what do you think?
I have to agree with you, man. Appreciate it, Charlie. You've been great.
Awesome. Well, this has been a great conversation. I thank you for inviting me here, and looking forward to listening to more podcasts from other people down the road. So thank you.
Thank you, Charlie. Thank you, Peter. Thank you, our dear audience, that you spent your precious time with us today, and see you later. Bye-bye.